Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl. Thanks again for downloading this episode of the Corner Office Podcast, my conversations with people leading the companies that you know and maybe you want to know more about. This time, it's Nigel Travis. He is the CEO of Dunkin' Brands, the company behind Dunkin' Donuts, of course, also Baskin-Robbins. We really did, though, spend most of our time talking about coffee and donuts because, you know, coffee and donuts. Also, we get into what you're most likely to buy along with your donut. The answer, my guess, would be surprising to you. And finally, what it's like to be a CEO with a background in human resources. Here we go, my conversation with Nigel Travis, the CEO of Dunkin' Brands.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Nigel Travis, welcome to the program.
I'm delighted to be here.
That wasn't much of a thing for listeners to go on, but they will very quickly discover you're not originally from, shall we say, the Boston area, are you? How'd a guy from East London wind up running this company?
Yeah, I get asked that question a lot, Kai, and I have to say, for someone who's now 68, I've had a kind of an eventful career. I've had the opportunity to move from East London, where I was brought up in a very entrepreneurial family, moved through human resources for 20 years, and then finally ended up leading companies such as Blockbuster, Papa John's, Dunkin' Brands. And I've been a CEO now for 13 and a half years.
So we were talking before we turned the microphones on, actually, about the varying levels of experience that CEOs sometimes have with various parts of their jobs. And I just want to point out here that I have never, ever once in a long time in doing this job spoken with a CEO who had 20 years in human resources, human relations. That's kind of amazing.
I think there are a few out there who over time have migrated from being HR, and I think in many ways it's a great, a great opportunity to prepare yourself for being a CEO, because at the end of the day, the CEO business is really about people, and if you come up through HR, it gives you a lot of the skills that are needed to be a CEO. It really helps, I think, refine and helps you think, which may be even better about your leadership approach. Obviously, management. I think it also helps you assess people. And I must say, I really benefited from those 20 years in HR, where you really are looking at senior people and helping other line managers decide who's right for the organization or not.
You spent time in Blockbuster, as you said, also Papa John's. But when you got this job running Dunkin' Brands in 2008-ish or so, am I right that you'd only been in a Dunkin' Donut shop like two, three times?
I hadn't been many times. In fact, back in, I think it was about 2007 when I was at Papa John's, we had a meeting in Florida, went into a Dunkin' store. It wasn't very good, and I said I wouldn't return. Well, that didn't happen. I returned many times after that, and I'm kind of famed now for my store visits. And it's not only my store visits. I think they're more fearful of my 13-year-old son's store visits.
Yeah, I bet, 13-year-old in the donut shop. But let me ask you this. Why did they give you this job if you had such a bad experience in the shop? Or maybe that's why they gave you the job.
Well, actually, I don't think that actually came up in the interview, but I think it was because I'd moved from Blockbuster, where clearly we had a lot of challenges with technology, to Papa John's. At Blockbuster, I'd launched Blockbuster Online. I'd learned a lot about technology, and we actually launched Blockbuster Online to some success, taking share at the time away from Netflix. So I went to Papa John's. I really focused on the digital strategy that I thought could help the pizza industry, which it did. I mean, we moved online pizza ordering from 5 to 30%. They liked what I'd done there. And I think they felt I could really help Dunkin' move to a different level, look at digital. I was also very disciplined from my days, not only at Blockbuster, but earlier on in my career at Burger King, of looking at comps and new products. So I had a pretty well-rounded background. But I think they also were attracted by the kind of people qualities and leadership qualities that we talked about earlier.
This is kind of a subjective question, or maybe the answer is subjective. I don't know. But it seems like Dunkin' Donuts now, it's almost cool and hip somehow.
Yeah. Well, donuts are doing really well. And it's interesting, when I joined the company, I joined right in the middle of the recession.
Yeah.
And I've recently described that as like having 25 magnifying glasses on your company.
Yeah, totally.
Because it really magnifies everything that's good and bad. And one of the things that we did badly was we always looked at the coffee competition. We didn't really look at the donut competition. So I've been very focused on studying that through the time I've been here. And as such, it's amazing how donuts have come back, all kinds of donuts. I actually read the other day about potato donuts.
No.
Which I hasten to say I've never tried.
Yeah.
But the donut business is coming back pretty strongly. I think people want to sometimes they just want to give themselves something to reward themselves. Donuts perfect. And here's an interesting fact. If you buy one donut, if you buy a coffee, if you buy a sandwich, the biggest attachment, in other words, the extra product that goes with it, the biggest attachment is always a donut. So
we're proud of donuts, and you're right, it's now fashionable. What extra do you have to buy with a donut?
Fascinating answer to that. All the statistics we have, and it's unbelievable, the biggest attachment to a donut is another donut. So I mean, that is unusual. And when I first saw the numbers, I said, okay, go away and look at that again. That can't be right, but it's right.
It occurs to me you have to be somewhat of a data guy to run a company like Dunkin' Brands.
Well, I think as America runs on Dunkin', the world runs on data. So I think you're absolutely right. I wouldn't say I was a mathematical whiz, but I'm interested in numbers. And something that happened to me when I was at Blockbuster, we had a guy come from Walmart. He moved from the then $84 billion business, store business at Walmart to Blockbuster, which was about $3 billion. And right from the start, this guy, whose name was Bill Fields, talked about numbers. He talked about getting the comps for every store every morning. He set up a system. And ever since then, I've been absolutely focused on numbers. I get up every morning at 5:30, look at the numbers from the day before.
Do you? Wow.
And that drives our day. It drives your mood. It drives your behavior. And it drives what you do to put things right or celebrate when it's when it's good.
All right. It's interesting that you do that on a daily basis, because one of the things we talk about on this program a whole lot is, look, one set of data, one day's data, one unemployment report is not the be-all and end-all, right? You want trends over time.
Yep.
I think it's interesting that you're looking at daily data at 5:30 in the morning.
We look at data not only daily, weekly. I mean, we have weekly meetings. Yeah. We have obviously quarterly meetings. And I am one of the few CEOs who will tell you, I think I would rather be public than private, because I think it puts pressure on you to really make sure that you're performing, and it makes you look at the data on a quarterly and as well as an annual basis. So you're absolutely right. You can't just look at it on a daily basis, but I think the daily pressure builds up to a monthly and quarterly and then annual.
Huh. Let me back you up to the coffee thing for a minute. Are you the guy who turned Dunkin' toward the coffee thing and tried to build the brand's reputation on that?
No, I'm not. And I think when you look back through the history of the company, even though our name was Dunkin' Donuts, right from the start, when the company was in factories and they were providing donuts and coffee at that time, so it was right from the start. But I think as coffee became more popular, Dunkin' Donuts grew. There was certainly a spell, probably 20 years before my time, where donuts were big, and donuts was seen as the attachment, going back to what we said before. But over time, it's grown. I think coffee has grown globally. It's still growing at a steady rate. And I think most big companies see coffee as a growth opportunity well into the future. So I can take no credit. What I will say is that we're very focused on coffee. We believe that we not only are the leaders in drip coffee and iced coffee, but we think we've got a great opportunity in the future with espresso and cold brew and all kinds of other coffees that people have these days.
Who's your competition then? I mean, are you thinking like Starbucks or are you thinking Krispy Kreme and Tim Hortons?
Well, everyone who sells coffee is our competition. So if you like starting backwards, the convenience stores are competition because they sell coffee. Clearly, there's big names like the ones you mentioned, Starbucks, McDonald's, Krispy Kreme. And then there's a bunch of brands that have been accumulated along with Krispy Kreme under the JAB grouping.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of competition out there. But, you know, let's face it, all fast food sells coffee. All convenience stores sell coffee. So we have to look both to the high-end coffee purveyors to along with the convenience stores who are trying to get you to come in and grab and go. And we have to compete and make sure that people not only enjoy the flavor of our coffee, but also recognize that some advantages we have is that we basically make our coffee for you individually. And we are, you know, I'll say this ourselves, we're proud of our speed.
There you go. Given that the greatest attachment to a donut, as you say, is another donut, how worried are you about people wanting to eat healthier and some of the criticism that, like, McDonald's has gotten, as opposed to you, who hasn't really gotten a whole lot, but you basically sell, you know, sugar?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's interesting, as I travel around the world, which has been one of the interesting parts of my job, I get asked about healthy eating everywhere.
Yeah.
If I had to rank it, Korea always asks more questions about healthy eating, followed by the UK, and the US is some way down the list.
I'm glad I'm hitting all the high points.
No. Yeah, you get credit for being an American that asks a healthy question. But I think we would say that we have a menu. We have a range of products that are, let's say, good for you. A range of products with low fat, low sugar, both on the Dunkin' side and the Baskin side. We believe that people should have a balanced approach to eating as well as fitness. One of the things that we do is we support a lot of sporting activities, not only big national brands and leagues, but also local activities like charity races, because we believe in that balanced lifestyle. But here's the thing that most people forget. Something like a donut, a lot of people tend to think of it as very unhealthy for you. It's not. I mean,
well,
we have donuts
now,
in the 200 calorie range. As we now have national menu labeling, I would challenge you to go into some burger stores and have a look at their calories.
Yep. No, that's fair. Listen, let me take you back to your HR roots here for a minute. One of the things you have said repeatedly in interviews and in statements you've made is that finding people to work in your shops is bar none the biggest problem that you have. Why do you suppose that is so?
Well, I think, Kai, it's a really interesting issue, and I think there's many reasons for it. I mean, without being able to support this statement, when I first came into the industry in, let's say it was about 1989 when I joined Burger King, when Graham Met, who I worked for at the time, bought the company, 80% of Americans started their working career in a restaurant. That number now, I think, has dropped to 60. So one of the reasons, one of the things that we have to tackle is there's no doubt that parents are pushing their kids away from that industry in a way that wasn't the case 20, 30 years ago. Now, I think there's all kinds of reasons for that. Some of it is that kids are pretty busy these days with other activities. I mean, being the father of not only a 38-year-old, but an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old, I'd like them to experience work early, and I think our industry gives them a lot of disciplines that you need for all kinds of jobs, such as turning up on time, making sure you know how to handle customers with politeness and care, dealing with problems, difficult teammates, you know, all kinds of things that our industry provides. So I think that's one reason. I think another reason is the economy is going along, let's say, the 3% GDP rate. I think that's good for America, but also means that jobs are being snapped up in this part of the world. So I'm talking about Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts. Yeah. We have unemployment about 3%. So that is below the unemployable level. So that is a challenge. I would also point out, though, that there is still an unemployment level amongst young people, which is really 18 to 24-year-olds, about 8.5%. So perhaps none of us, including us, are taking advantage of all the young people out there. So on top of that, I think the industry has had a little bit of a bad image, which we're trying to correct. We're trying to put together a apprentice-type program that can attract people in. But I think one of the issues is that because the economy is growing so fast, the demand for people is just outstripping supply, and we need to tackle the supply issue. And I think what that truly means is some kind of discussion about comprehensive immigration reform. You know, with all the safeguards that people are concerned about border controls and what have you, we were one of the pioneers with E-Verify, and we make sure our franchisees use it. So I think there are answers, but it's an answer which at certain times isn't always politically acceptable.
What do you make of the push to get higher wages for folks in the fast food industry and in your industry, broadly speaking?
Well, the first thing I'd say is our industry at various times has said no too easily to many things. I think you have to have an open mind. I prefer to think that wages should be driven by the market. And certainly many of our franchisees pay a lot for their employees to attract the best people in. I think different parts of the country have different economic structures. I think if you compare where we live in Massachusetts with, say, Alabama or Mississippi, very different economies. So what is right in Mississippi may not be right in Massachusetts. So I think to have one rate across the whole country doesn't make sense. But we've always been very open-minded to increasing the minimum wage either by state or by federal rates. So we have an open mind to discussions about it. But I think one thing that everyone has to recognize, at the end of the day, the best way to grow wages is to open stores. That's what we do. I mean, on an average year, we open between 300-400 net new stores with Dunkin' alone, more in international, more in Baskin. And we do that by focusing on franchisee unit economics. And if we don't have good unit economics, we don't grow and we don't provide more jobs. So I think it's by taking a sensible approach, but certainly higher wages are part of the answer.
Yeah, but just to be clear, more stores and more jobs doesn't mean higher wages in those jobs.
No, but what I'm saying is it's no good just going for higher wages and ignoring the other side of the equation, which is unit economics.
Got it.
And if you look at the restaurant industry overall, there has been a decline in the last couple of years in restaurants in the country. And part of the reason is that the unit economics don't work. So, you know, other people on the other side of that equation say, well, that's not a bad thing because every industry needs a little bit of a shakeout. And in an industry with so much franchise, with such a franchise business, that perhaps doesn't happen as clinically as, say, the auto industry where GM or Ford or Chrysler or whoever it is can just lay off a bunch of people or cut a bunch of plants. I mean, franchise businesses sometimes will do everything they can to continue.
Last question before I let you go, sir, and it's the put up or shut up question. How many times a week you figure you stop in at a Dunkin' shop or a Baskin Robbins?
I'd say probably on average about 8-9 times a week.
Really? Wow. Are you getting a donut every time?
No. I drink coffee every time. I love our sandwiches. Our sandwiches are great. But I also drink our coffee at home with K-Cups or my wife and I, whoever's up first, brew Dunkin' coffee at 5:30 every morning. So it's not just the number of times I go into the store. I touch our products probably on average 8-9 times a day, and makes me very happy.
Nigel Travis, the CEO of Dunkin' Brands. Mr. Travis, thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Kai.
Hope you enjoyed that one. Nigel Travis, the CEO of Dunkin' Brands. If you did, let us know. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or maybe just a rating if you'd like. Tell your friends. We do appreciate it. The Corner Office Podcast is produced by Bridget Bodner. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the Executive Director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the Senior Vice President and General Manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Another new episode for you next week.